Hi, I'm Ross Marone, a marketer, educator, and strategist who has spent the last 20 years exploring the intersection of creativity, data, and storytelling. I built this podcast for people who want to sharpen their marketing skills, whether they're new to the field or looking to level up. You're listening to the This Is Marketing podcast. Today, we're diving into a big topic. It's branding. Now, whether you're building a business or shaping your professional presence online, your brand is more than a logo. It's a reputation. It's a system of identities and a story people are going to remember. In this episode, I'll walk you through what makes a brand, the difference between personal and business brands, how to build consistency through visuals and messaging, and how to create a style guide that really keeps everything aligned. So let's just get right into it with what is a brand. A brand is not just a logo. A lot of people think that's my brand, that logo right there, but it's not. It's the total perception people have of you and your business. Think of a brand as a promise delivered consistently. Brands exist whether you build them intentionally or not. Now, a lot of people, I think, get into this idea that a brand is a slogan, it's a tagline, and that's just not true. It's really a combination of things. But for me, brand is synonymous with branding, which means how do we execute on the brand? How do we put it out there? Branding, in a general principle, if you want to think about it as one thing, it's repetition. Branding is all about being so out there and in front of as many people as possible, or maybe a very niche audience, wherever it is, however you're delivering your brand, it's about the frequency in which you deliver it. So how often, how many touch points? And when you think of branding in that sense, then you start to realize and understand how marketing and advertising help build that brand and help execute on the brand. When you think about touch points, we're thinking about digital, social media, all the different platforms, all the different channels. Then you start to get into traditional marketing. You think about print materials, billboards, TV. Now, it's all over the place with what you can do with marketing, but it's the consistency of the message that you're delivering that helps define your brand. So let's define brand a little bit more, because I think it's kind of a very broad stroke statement to say, and branding can be micro brands, big brands. But when we're thinking about the two types of brands that really exist out there, and I'm going to say and go out on a limb and say there's only these two. It's your personal brands and your business brands. In the past 10 years, we've seen personal brands explode. Really, it's due to social media. But people are finally looking and saying, okay, the things that I've done in my life, and honestly, this podcast is no different. The things I've done, the experiences I have 20 years in this field, have some kind of personal brand now to myself. I know what I can do. I know what I can sell myself on. So I have to go out and be able to build a brand that represents me, and it should be representative of who I am. And where it gets muddy, and you might already be thinking about this, is there's a lot of people that go on social media that say they do one thing, but they have none of the experience to back it up. Anyone can go on the internet and be whoever they want. But a personal brand's really built around your personality, your expertise, the values, and your public presence. So the more that you put out there, the more that people see that frequency of you, they start to get a sense of who you are, what your personality is, and what value are you bringing to them? What are you bringing in whatever that brand identity is and how you distribute it? What is it that you're bringing that kind of makes you the expert on things? I'm not claiming to be an expert in marketing in this podcast, but what I am doing is delivering 20 years worth of information and knowledge and mistakes and experience back to you through this podcast. So I'm talking about things that I'm familiar with. I'm talking about things that I've experienced. I'm not trying to be something I'm not, because especially in this field, you'd be able to see right through that. So your personal brand has to be true, and that means it has to be authentic. So authenticity, I think, with this kind of the push that we've seen with personal brands come because of social media, there's also this sense of the authenticity and kind of a sniff test that has come out of it. Users are getting more adept to saying, you know what? I don't believe this person. I don't believe this social media. There's no way this is true. I think age has a little bit to do with that as well. I think older generations definitely can see through things like that. As someone who works at a university, I get to interact with college students who are fresh out of high school and kind of going through the early part of their career in college. And there's a lot of that personal brand that exists out there with each of them, but also who they follow and what they believe. And as we kind of compare notes on it, I always am shocked at not how gullible, that's probably the misuse of the word, but how easy they are to fall into and believe exactly what they're saying. So maybe the word is gullible. But that is where personal brands right now are just exploding. If you could get a brand going and build it personally, then you have all kinds of opportunities too. You can monetize yourself, monetize your brand, become a brand ambassador for others. But in that same sense, what you're doing from a personal brand standpoint, it should also be reflected in the brands that you work with. They should be representative of who you are and what you do and how you interact. For the other end of that is the advertiser. It's, you know, I'm thinking about that. If I want to work with a collaborator or get somebody to, like, I do some reviews. So to see that go on, to be able to make that connection and say, okay, this brand is well representative of who I am and I need to represent them in the best way as well. So personal brands have a huge opportunity, but again, it's built around your personality, expertise, values, and public presence, what people think about you, the authentic side of yourself, and how that's represented. Now, the other side of that coin is the business brands, which are built around an organizational mission, product values, customer experiences, and a visual identity, which we're going to talk a little bit more about next. But from a business standpoint, very relatable to a personal brand, except you need to think of it as a whole. A brand for a business may have been, it may be a family business. It may have been started by one person. It might be one person that represents the business, but those that interact with the business, those people that work with the business, the people you serve, the customers, that community, they really make up the whole of what a brand is. And in the hardest test, not test, but the hardest thing to do as a marketer in building a brand is get to that identity. And get to it in such a way that it's well represented. And if you've ever tried to do branding exercises or anything like that, hopefully it led you into a focus group. I think focus groups are absolutely amazing. I think it should be a general practice just to hold focus groups with people, not only internally around the company, but externally with your customers. And then that way you can really get a sense of who these audiences are. Who are we represented internally? What does it mean to work for our business? As a customer, what does that mean to be a customer of ours and how are we measuring that? And when you do focus groups, you could ask as many questions as you want to help get to that identity. Once you build that, then that kind of becomes your brand essence. It's who you are. It's how you're represented. It's the chemical makeup that makes you exactly who you are as a business. And so when you can take that brand and the focus group data you have and then translate that into an identity with the is reflective in your product values. It's reflective in the experience your customers have with you, and then well represented visually, then you can have a really good thing on your hands. And think about big brands that you interact with. Think about maybe athletic wear or drinks that you drink, things, anything, any brand that has some kind of presence. Think about how you can relate to that right away. How do you understand that it's that brand being represented? We all talk about Nike and Reebok and Under Armour and clothing companies and their identity in the sports field and how they're represented. And it's a really good practice to just as a study, think about them. Think about Nike. Think about what their logo is. We all know the Nike swoosh. So you can see that represented, but then think about the way it's used across all of their different identities as sub-brands. How's it put on the water bottles? How's it put on outfits? How's it put on shoes? How are they using it? How do they adjust it? What's that visual identity that makes Nike, Nike? Without the swoosh, is Nike able to be visually identified without the swoosh? And if the answer to that question from your perspective is yes, then there's more to the brand because the brand is built around the organization. Maybe it's built around imagery. I can say Michael Jordan and you're gonna think Nike at some point. You might think basketball first, but Nike down the road, depending on when you're born, I guess, and how much you've interacted with the Jordan era of things. But you should see that that is a representation. You took a personal brand of an athlete, and that personal brand is now synonymous with Nike, which is synonymous with the swoosh, Air Jordan, all of the things, Nike shoes. It becomes a whole thing. And that's where a brand that does it well is really able to separate themselves from everybody else. And sometimes that, you know, Nike's not an overnight success. It's not a, you know, woke up one day and had this idea. Nike, if you know the history of it, was built over decades of experience, of mishaps, of, you know, taking gambles, investing tons of money, not only into the products, but also into the people that represent the brand. So your brand really has to be all encompassing of all of these things. How are you going to represent it? How are you going to talk about it? And then how is your audience going to be able to actually understand you without having logos, without having any voice or things like that? Can you get to a place with your brand where you build that? I'd ask the same question about your personal brand. Are you able to get to a point in your personal brand where maybe you are well known in a space that's a topic? Like, oh yeah, I know of this thing, but I know this person's the number one person representative from their brand that goes along with that. Those are the things you should work towards. But when you start, if you're starting from scratch, I think you have the greatest opportunity to sit down and take the time that it takes to do the study. Take the time to hold the focus groups. Take the time to try some things out, put some messaging together, run it by people, see what the feedback is. I would caution though in this, and this is true for any type of marketing, advertising, or branding. It's one thing to have to go to an owner of a company or a board and talk to them about what your goals are and what you're going towards. If you have the opportunity to get away from their input and influence on what you're actually doing, what the message is, what it looks like, maybe the visual identity of it. If they aren't people that work in design, that have worked in marketing, that have worked with brands, you will get as many opinions as people are in the room. And I've experienced this time and time again. I've sat in front of boards. I've sat in front of administrators, my own bosses at times, and said, here's what we've come up with. Here's what we've worked towards. We've done the homework. We've done the focus groups. Here's going to be the message. Here's going to be the visual representation. And them come back at you and say, I hate it. I don't like it. I just don't like the way it looks. And you have to sit there as a marketer and scratch your head and say, but the data is really pointing us here. The customers have told us this is the direction we should go. And so if you have that mindset and that ability to kind of show what you're going to do and how you're going to push the brand out over what the actual brand is, you really have just a cleaner way to get there. And I say cleaner because I don't want to swear too much in this podcast. And I've had so much bad experience trying to roll out brands with people that just have an opinion about it and want to put their two cents in, but none of their response is grounded in foundation. It's not grounded in experience or study. They just go with a gut check, and that's not good enough to say whether a brand is good or not. Yeah, I agree. Sometimes you could come up with a slogan or an idea that's just a home run all around. Everyone loves it and it's great and you go with it and that's great. But sometimes when you're trying to challenge the brand or really get a refresh underneath it, you might have something that's kind of out in left field, but you know it'll work for one reason or another, maybe hopefully always based in data and focus group information, but you know it's going to work. Don't get into business of leaning into an opinion that doesn't understand the choices that we've made and why we've made them. I would never cross a bridge that they're building and go and talk to the engineers and say, you know, I don't like all these spires you're building on here and all these different cables that you have. It's just going to mess up the entire skyline. There's a reason that they're doing it the way they do it, and they have to make things work while trying to get some aesthetics to be in there as well. It's not much different with the brand or a logo or anything like that. So go in with that mindset, but also go back to our principle here. If it's representative of a personal brand, it's built around a personality, then it's going to show through everything you do. And again, thinking back to branding and repetition, our goal as marketers is to develop something and then start to get it out there and get it out there often and frequent. Frequency is extremely important. So business brand, personal brand, at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure at this point in my career and that the experience that I've had, believing that a brand is not the end all be all to the success of a business. It's everything that makes that business what it is. Your brand can be a little bit off-centered and still do very well. And I think that comes down to the delivery of it, all of the attributes and things we build underneath it, the creative, the marketing, the advertising campaigns, the placement, the messaging. That all is what can sell a total brand overall. It at the end of the day, it comes down to the experience that your customers have with you. Did they have a good experience with the product? Did they have great customer service if they had an issue or when they were ordering? If the answer is yes to all of these things, you are building brand value. And you're building brand value that turns into brand perception in the market, which again, regardless of the look and feel and logos and this and that, you can excel the business brand and get it out there, and you can excel the business because of it. So a brand is an identity. And your identity is going to include things like the messaging, the design, the tone. Said another way, your identity includes what you say, that's your messaging, how you look, which is the design, and how you feel, it's that tone. And then also, how does the customer feel when they interact with all of those things? When they hear the message, do they believe it? When they see the design, is it aesthetically pleasing to them? Do they understand what you're telling them? Can you look at a design and know what they're selling without there being any words on it? That should always be a practice when you're doing marketing. Think, if I'm doing a design or I'm working on something, is there enough here that someone can look at it without having any words and know maybe what I'm selling, maybe know who I am as the brand? If you're doing that, then your design's on point. And then the feeling of it, what am I saying? How does this brand make you feel? How did this advertisement that you saw make you feel? Did it make you take an action, or did it at least store somewhere in your brain to come back to it? So it's a combination of these things. It's really the combination of values, visuals, and voice. The three V's, let's keep it like that. Values, visuals, voice. I really like that. And I think that that's where you can really lean into all three of those things and say, okay, here's the look of the brand. Here's the values that we believe in. Here's what the customers believe. And then here's what our voice is going to be, so that we match not only our brand, but the customers we're serving. So ask yourself these questions. What do I want to be known for? And what should people feel when they interact with the brand? And by answering those questions, it's going to start to set you on that path to ensuring you're developing a brand that does have all of the things clicking and everything right. You know, in the last 10 minutes, I said that, you know, your business may be able to exist without a brand. And that's true. There's plenty of businesses out there that are just businesses. They offer a service, they offer a product. They don't focus on branding, they don't focus on marketing. It's word of mouth, it's whatever it is, and it works. But if you're going to spend the time doing it, and this is going to be the first step you should really lean into, it's getting to the identity of it and writing these things down, putting it together, and doing that in such a way that you can share it out there, not only with your customers to a degree, but also internally, everyone within your business, anyone that interacts with your business, other businesses that you might work with, need to understand your brand. They should understand your brand. They should be able to recognize your brand, but especially internally, everybody should know the messaging, the logos, the color schemes, fonts we use. All of these things matter. And we're going to get into that here in a second with brand style guides and how to create those. But everyone needs to also understand what the identity is. So if you're not using these people to help make the decision, it's definitely worth bringing them in to give their feedback on. And then once it's developed and you start to deploy it and build these things around it, they need to be brought up to speed. They need to understand. Your sales team needs to know how you're talking about your brand in the market. So when a customer calls and says, I saw this and I have a question, they know exactly how to answer it. And they're also carrying the brand tone through their customer service that they're giving. So we want to make sure that we're aligning identity through these creative elements. That's your logo, which is your visual markings that represent your brand. But it's not your brand itself. Your logo, Nike, is not the swoosh alone. It can't be. I mean, we could definitely make the association, but Nike is everything else that they have done since developing the logo and getting into the market. It's the sports side of things. It's how they get athletes to go from good to great, you know, with their brand. But that's what it becomes. Your logo is really the mark that's the association to your brand. So think of it that way, and don't spend too much time trying to figure out how to make your brand be represented in a logo. That's when you start getting into cramming in words and cramming in imagery and all these different things. And at the end of the day, the customer doesn't really care. They just want to buy from you, whatever the heck it is you're selling, or interact with you or follow you. They don't care what your logo is until they want to wear it. And so if you're getting into that kind of business where you have a brand that can be worn, you can go out and do things with it, then I would really spend the time to develop a logo in a way that actually goes out and makes sense. So when you're talking about logos, we have to think about typography. What fonts are we using? Is it reflective in the tone? You know, think playful versus professional. Ugh. Playful versus professional. Say that 500 times fast. When you think of logos and typography, you may say it's just words. Well, no, words really matter. Are you using a serif font, a sans serif font? You know, is it look, you know, if you're using a serif font, then you might be a little dated in the way it looks. But if you cut all those kind of curves off of it, now you have more modern looking typography. So it really does matter. And again, I'm always going to upsell using other marketing entities. So if you're going to develop a logo, don't try to do it yourself. Hire a graphic designer, not only because they deserve the work because of the time they put in, but they're going to bring all of these things to the table. They're going to understand fonts. They're going to have fonts in their head that are going to visually match up with your brand. And if you find a designer that has been able to work with branding or work on a brand style guide, that's the person you definitely want to hire. And you are just as important as they are being a designer. You're as important being a business owner or the marketing person with the business trying to translate what the owners are telling you to tell the designer. You know, playing that middle person is so much of what our work is. And it's trying to be able to get the message from point A to point C and playing in the middle with your own influence. So we really need to be thinking about that. And that's why I would always say bring in a designer to help with that. Same thing when it comes to color palettes. What colors are you choosing? What are the emotional connections? And if you don't believe that's a thing, just do a quick Google search on colors and emotions and how that's reflected. And that'll lead you down this path of being able to choose the right colors. You have the right logo, you have the right font, you have the right color palette. And then we get in the messaging. What are we saying? What's the taglines, our mission statements, key product language? Is there consistency through all of that to what we are? And that really is defined by voice and tone. How you sound in emails, social media ads. Are you funny? Is it authoritative? Are you supportive? Are you solving a problem? Are you showing empathy all the time? What is it that you do with your brand and how do you represent your brand with a voice and a tone? When you figure that out, all these things start to come together. If you were asking me, you know what, Ross, you're rattling off so much right now. Where do I start with any of this? Well, you're definitely going to want to start with some of the visual identity stuff, but you really have to really lean into the focus group of the brand. So if it was me and I said, okay, we're starting a new brand project, where do we begin? We always start with people. We're going to sit down. We're going to start working with people. We're going to ask them, what do you think our brand is? What do you think the messaging is for our brand? How would you explain what our company does to a stranger? And from there, you start to collect those things. And through that, you can actually lay out. There's a lot of different studies and there's different techniques out there to using visual identity to help get to a brand. And basically, you would lay down different photos of different things, different color schemes of different things. The photos might be heavy in one color versus another. Kind of lay that all on the table with people that aren't in marketing. These are the people that work for you. These are your customers. These are anyone that interacts with your brand. Lay all that stuff down and ask them questions about, you know, if you think of our brand, what do you see here on the table that's representative of that? And we don't want you to say why yet, but pull that out and have everyone at the table select things. And if they wanted to grab something, somebody else, what you're doing is they're picking up photos, they're picking up color schemes. And if you kind of took all that back, there's a method to this madness. And I've only experienced this on that end of it, being the person that sat around the table and picked the things up and went through the focus group of this. But when the company that we were working with at the time went back, what they were able to deliver back to us was just so on point. They understood how we were represented. And that was a great example of this is, you know, my full-time job, I work at Youngstown State University. I've been there for 20 years. I worked as a web developer initially. I went all the way through the marketing office, the chief marketing officer. And then I kind of got picked up and brought over to the other side of the house with academics. So I'm working on academic marketing and enrollment. But through my time there, I successfully was able to launch two iterations of a website. I launched two brands that are still in use today, the Why and Proud and Know Why. Both were pressured to me from our board of trustees and some administrators at the time when I was doing that part of my career there, I'll say. But I was pressured to come up with a brand. We did. We delivered it. That was Why and Proud. Everyone really liked it. It resonated really well. We were able to use it to really represent the college and the university. And then as time goes by, people get stagnant on things. Even though I kept explaining, you know, our customer base in higher education is reset every year. We're attracting a new cohort of students that come in. And that means that they're interacting with our brand for the last maybe 2 to 3 years. And then they get here and they experience the brand, they graduate, they move on, they become alumni, maybe they come back, maybe they become a donor, whatever that life cycle looks like. The brand is really important for that interaction at the beginning and then being able to anchor into it for their entire time here. What I don't like is that the people that are internal, that see the stuff every day and see the brand every day, at some point are going to step back and go, I'm sick of looking at this. We need something new. And when that came to me, I said, guys, I don't know why. This is working really well. It's being, you know, on social media, people are using it all over the place. It's reflected in everything we do. People speak it when they're on TV. I'm Why and Proud. Why do we have to get something new? Well, there's just a lot of pressure to do it. So I went back and we reworked and brought in another company to help us kind of design and develop and get us away from, okay, How do we separate ourselves from why and proud and move into something else? So we went down this path to know why. Got a little tangent there, but what I wanted to say was getting to the why and proud the first time around. Working with this company that was doing this layout, I know there's a name for it, I just can't think of it. I'm hoping it comes to me as I'm talking, but there is a name for this. And what really happens is that when you get into this tabling, what we were doing was how do you represent Youngstown State University? Well, Youngstown, Ohio is in a still county. It's in a still area. It's in between Cleveland and Pittsburgh. It's the Rust Belt. And that has both positive and negative connotations to it. But as we're looking at what the Rust Belt is, you know, that was the things that we were doing and picking up in that room. We were picking up rusty looking photos and iron and steel and grittiness and all this. And it is very representative of who Youngstown is. It's blue collared, hardworking, built in steel, unbreakable, you know, even though a big collapse of the steel industry, we're always kind of the underdogs and fighting back from that, which I'm fine with it. It's pretty cool to live in a place like this. So that was that representation. So if you're going to start somewhere, start there. Start with identifying yourself and then get into visually representing what that identity is. And then once you have that, and that's kind of where we're at, aligning your identity through creative elements. Once you have that, you can start to design color palettes, typography, logos. All of this goes into your brand style guide. And a brand style guide brings consistency. It's essential for both personal brands and business brands. So regardless, you should always be working towards trying to build a brand style guide at the beginning as you go along. And there's a lot of rules that go with a brand style guide. How do we use a logo? How are we not to use the logo? What's a logo lockup look like? How do we include words with it? How do we exclude words? If we have a partnership with someone, how can they use our logo? Are we allowed to change the color of the logo? Can we put the logo on an image? Can an image manipulate the logo and vice versa? All of these are rules that you have to think of. The same goes for typography. The same thing goes for color schemes. What colors do we use? What are our primary colors? Do we have secondary colors? Do we have black and white versions? You have to really think through this. And what I would say is, as you're building a brand style guide, give yourself time to make it. Make sure that you sell it as being evergreen. Evergreen and ever-evolving, the two E's. So you're gonna make it in a way that you can change it, manipulate it, but there has to be a single authority on it. That's the other thing I always said about our brand style guide. We developed the first one at Youngstown State. When I took over as director of marketing, I looked around and we had so many logos that were being used. I mean, when you're talking about a mid-sized university with hundreds of departments, thousands of people working there, everyone thinks, oh, I work at YSU, I could just do this. They take the logo, they take the brand, they do this with it, they change the color, they manipulate our mascot. Those are all no-nos. They're all trademark things. Now, you don't need the trademark to enforce it, but the university, we finally sat down and we said, listen, we're going to get the board to enable us and say, you know what? You guys are the ones that are going out and you're going to execute on the brand and you own the brand. So if there's changes to be made, they go through you. You are the final authority on this. And so that also enabled us to police it, to set some standards, build this guide. But what I did during that time was sat down with my design team who interacts with these things every day. They're the ones that get the requests. We're the ones that get the requests to change the logo, to change this identity, to use this phrasing instead of this. So I used them to build the guide. I said, I want you to write down every dumb thing you've been asked to do with our brand, with our logos, put it in writing so that we can look at that and analyze it and say, okay, how do we put this into a style guide that makes sense? And so when you do that, the things you should think about, easy enough, your mission statement, that usually comes towards the end, right? We developed everything else. We know what our business model is and what we're doing, but what's our mission statement and how does our mission statement reflect our brand, the advertising, the marketing, our customer base, our internal people who work here, the fabric of who we are, the products themselves? What is that mission statement that says it? I don't believe that mission statements are vital to the success of a business. I don't believe they're vital to marketing, branding, advertising. Mission statements to me are just something that you could always kind of go back with if you get confused and you could say, well, our mission was always to do this thing. So it's kind of like another anchor, right? We're going to drop that anchor in and say, that's always going to be back there, just guiding us, just keeping us steady in the water. And we're not going to get too far out of where we're at. It's always back there. So mission statements are important. They should be included in a brand style guide, but they're not vital to anything. So same with vision statements. I do believe messaging matters, but I think you can't settle on a single message. You should be very versatile in what you say. So your core values are part of your brand style guide. What are the beliefs and guiding decisions? Logo uses, again, the do's and don'ts, size, placement, backgrounds, all of that stuff. typography rules. What fonts do we use? What fonts do we use in headlines? How about body text, footer text? Do we use callouts? What color schemes are we using? So what's our color palette? What are the hex codes that are being used? What are the CMYK breakdowns for that to be built? How do we build color schemes for print? Imagery style, what kind of photos are we using? What's the style of photos we use? Do we want to make sure we always have people represented in our photos? Do we always show our product in our photo? Do we make sure it's in nature all the time? If we're using illustrations, what are the do's and don'ts of that? What kind of icons do we use? Are they all part of the brand and are they on brand? Voice and tone guidelines, sample phrases, do's and don'ts. What do we say about ourselves? What do we always say about ourselves? What do we never say about ourselves? And what do we try to avoid saying by ourselves? That becomes guidelines for voice and tone. I think it's a great opportunity there to work with some PR people, work with an editor, work with a very good writer. You're going to pay for these people, but they're bringing, again, just like a designer, an experience to this. So really look for the people. And what I will say about that is don't be afraid to shop around on it either. Don't be afraid to shop around when you're hiring a photographer, someone that has a certain style that you like. Don't be afraid to find somebody that has an expertise maybe in your field. Like, oh, I do all outdoor photography. Okay, good. I want you. I want all my photos to be outside. So do your shopping with that. The same is true for video production, social media management, writers, editors. Find people that are representative of the things you actually want to be represented in your brand. And then finally, with your brand style guide, have some audience definitions in there. Who's this brand speaking to and how do we say that? It's really a good idea to visually represent do's and don'ts throughout your brand style guide. Because remember, at the end of the day, you're delivering this not only to your internal people, but it's going to be used for everything that gets produced after you leave. And as long as this brand exists under the brand style guide that you create, you want it to be executed flawlessly. So you want to make sure you have it outlined as much as you can. I've made it a point in ours, off the recommendation of our designers, we need to show this. So we said, okay, well, we're going to show actual bad designs that we've done in the past. We're going to show the rules that we broke because we didn't have these standards in place. Show what that looks like and make sure it shows it in a way that they understand, like, oh yeah, that does not look good. It's not representative. So visually, I think there's a great way to do that. So that's super important. And in your audience definitions, when you're talking about who the brand's speaking to, include demographic information, include gender, race, all of the things that make up that audience so that we understand exactly what the rules are when you're going to the brand and you're speaking out there to your audience, because you make those connections early, it makes it much easier for there to be consistency in all that we do. So lastly, I just want to leave it with kind of this, where do people go wrong with branding? So number one, inconsistency across platforms. When we look at social media, people get so excited to just share something everywhere that they might change it a little bit for the platform itself. And by doing that, they're changing the brand. So that inconsistency is a big no-no. The second part of that is confusing brand promises. So what are we going to say about our brand and how are we going to say it? That is super important to what we do. So don't confuse brand promises at all. Next is prioritizing aesthetics over substance. So getting that look and feel over the actual thing that we're trying to say is a big no-no for brands. Do not prioritize aesthetics. Prioritize substance, truth, honesty, and authenticity in all the branding that you do. And then the last thing I want to talk about is really as a no-no, it's not paying attention to updating your branding as the business evolves or the individual evolves. So as you look at these things and you're wondering, you know, as I'm growing as a business, as I'm growing as a personal brand, how can the brand visually evolve with it? So it's not to say that you develop a brand and that's it. It's in concrete. You can never tear it out, never do anything. You should be willing to adjust the brand as you mature personally or as a business. So keep that in the back of your mind just to always keep moving forward. How often should we revisit a brand? That's a question that's really dependent on you. It's dependent on the business, the market. It all comes into play. So really you got to think about how long do we want the brand to be? Like I told, you know, my little example, our brand for Why I'm Proud probably ran for 5 years. And then after 5 years, they came back and they said, oh, we want something new. So you had to go back and redevelop it. I don't think it had enough of its life cycle. I think we probably had at least another 5 years in it and then maybe revisit it or maybe just kind of mature it a little bit. But we just didn't get there. So Not updating the brand as the business or individual evolves is a no-no, so make sure you do that. Make sure you leave yourself room, but leave yourself a lot of room. The last thing you want to do is get down a path within 6 months to a year and you have things going and then you get sick of looking at the brand and you come back and say, I just can't stand to see it anymore. I'm telling you, put yourself in the customer's shoes. It's the first time they're seeing it. When they're becoming a customer for you for the first time, that's the first time they're starting to interact and understand your brand and engage with it in such a way. Well, we made it here to the end. So thank you so much for listening to this. If you like this, make sure you hit that subscribe button. I am on iTunes and I'm also on Spotify, but you can find me at thisismarketingpodcast.com. You can reach out to me on Twitter at Ross Marone. You have feedback about this. You have questions. I'm monitoring that. It's really me. So we can interact there. And if you have questions you want answered and you ask them there, I'm definitely going to bring them back to this podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.